During his news conference yesterday, President Obama defended his decision not to outline fixes for Social Security and Medicare in his spending plan for next year. He said compromise on those entitlement programs, along with revising the tax code, is months away and will require bipartisan trust. But the president did suggest Social Security could be the first target because he says it's not a big contributor to the deficit like Medicare and Medicaid.
I think we can avoid slashing benefits, and I think we can make it stable and stronger for not only this generation, but for the next generation.
Economist Dean Baker is co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, a progressive think tank. He joins us from his office to talk about Social Security and other budget issues. Dean, welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
To start, your thoughts on the president's budget for 2012. It's a $3.7 trillion budget. What's your headline?
Well, I guess my headline is I feel the discussion's been really misdirected because the major problem facing the country today, of course, is that we have 9% unemployment, and no one predicts that will get down anytime soon. But instead of focusing on ways to get the unemployment rate down, we have this obsession with the deficit. And it's really backwards because the main reason that we're having large deficits today is that we have high unemployment. So I'm very concerned we're basically focusing on the wrong issue, and we have this huge, huge problem. We would ordinarily think of 9% unemployment as being an absolute disaster, and no one's even talking about it.
Well, the president says his budget will create jobs, but it also cuts programs for the poor, home heating assistance, job training for low-income seniors. Those all take a hit, while defense spending goes up. Do you think this is a balanced budget in terms of priorities?
Well, no, a couple points on that. First off, when he's saying it's creating jobs, he means it best in a long-term story. I mean, one could argue whether that will even be true or not, but you could argue that, you know, insofar as we have increased investments for transportation, high-speed rail, energy conservation, there's some money in there, not a huge amount, but you could say, okay, that will create jobs in the long term. It's not going to create jobs next year. But the other part, yeah, I mean, we have a very large military budget. We're way above where we were, say, pre-9/11. And the military isn't being asked to sacrifice in the same way as, you know, people dependent on home heating oil, children who might go without adequate food because we're cutting back nutrition programs. I mean, the cuts are disproportionately on the domestic side, not to say that there aren't programs that can't be made more efficient, and some programs probably should be eliminated, but that shouldn't be the focus of cuts.
Republicans were quick to criticize the president because he didn't address Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid in his budget. They say he punted on those big issues. What do you think?
Well, again, this is a case where these issues have been seriously misrepresented. Social Security, and basically everyone agrees on this because these are numbers straight from the Congressional Budget Office, it's basically fine for almost the next 30 years. Congressional Budget Office says it could pay every penny of benefits through the year 2039 with no changes whatsoever. Even after that, if we never, ever, ever did anything, it still would pay around 80% of scheduled benefits, which is higher than what people get today. So that's kind of a bad story. You put on autopilot, never do anything. Hard to imagine that happening. But, you know, we still have people getting benefits forevermore. Also, it doesn't contribute to the deficit because Social Security is a separate financing mechanism. It's the payroll tax that we all pay. So there's this confusion, this fear being built around Social Security. We don't have to do anything on it. He didn't punt. He did the right thing. He didn't do anything on it because it's fine. Medicare and Medicaid, again, we all know that this is being driven by private sector health care costs. And this is just kind of amazing to me because you have all these people running around saying that they're going to be tough and tell the American people the truth. We have to cut Medicare and Medicaid. And go, well, the reason Medicare and Medicaid are so expensive is that our health care costs are way out of line with everyone else in the world. We pay more than twice as much per person as the average for other wealthy countries like England, Germany, Canada, you know, countries we would compare ourselves to. We have nothing to show for it in the way of outcomes. And the answer has to be to fix our private health care system. And, you know, President Obama did some steps towards that last year with the health care reform bill. I don't think they're enough. I don't think anyone thinks they're enough. But if we want to be serious about reducing the cost of Medicare and Medicaid, the answer has to be to fix the health care system. You cut Medicare and Medicaid, you don't fix the health care system. That just means people don't get care.
Let's go back to Social Security for a moment. There's a lot of fear around the idea of cutting it. We've heard for years that it's going to be insolvent in so many years. And you're saying it's we have a long ways to deal with that. No need to be so concerned now. What kind of shape is Social Security in right now?
Social Security has been running annual surpluses of of tax revenue over its payouts for most of the last 30 years. It had a small shortfall last year and would be close to zero in terms of that balance. Now that's made up by interest payments on the bonds that are held by the trust fund. So it's still the trust fund is still growing on the order of about $160, $170 billion a year right now. It's projected to keep growing till I think it peaks out in, I think it's 2022, and then we start drawing down the trust fund. This is all by design. I mean, this is, you know, the program. People sometimes get alarmists and go, oh, my God, we're going to start drawing on the trust fund. Well, that was the point. You know, if I save money in a 401k and then I retire and then I start drawing on the 401k, well, that's what I expected to do.
But doesn't the ratio change over time? What's the ratio now of people paying into Social Security over the number of people retired?
It's about 3-1 now. It's projected to fall to about 2-1 by 2030. It had, of course, been about 5-1 back in 1960. So we get these people being sort of hysterical about this. Well, we actually knew about it. I've been on panels with people go, oh, my God, the baby boomers are retiring. I go, guess what? You know, we knew the baby boomers were going to retire 50 years ago when they were born.
So you're saying no need to worry about that right now, and that it doesn't make any sense economically to reform Social Security right now.
Well, you get these people who say, well, it would be better to do it early. Well, if you mean by doing it early, you're going to cut benefits for people this year, next year, 5 years from now, my response is these are people who just got nailed by the collapse of the housing bubble. For most people, their major asset, insofar as they have any wealth, is their home, and they just saw that plummet. So we're going to tell people that didn't save very much, good or bad. I mean, you can blame them if you like, but the point is they have very little way of retirement savings. They don't have traditional pensions for the most part. The wealth they did have was in their home, and much of that just disappeared with the collapse of the housing bubble. Now we're going to cut people's Social Security? I mean, that doesn't sound very good to me. Yeah, that improves the finances of the program, but the point was to guarantee people who spent their life working a decent retirement. That goes the wrong way. If we're talking about further out, you know, 20, 30 years out, well, you know, at some point it has a shortfall. I have my ideas about how I'd want it to be addressed. Other people have their ideas. But we don't have to write everything down for all eternity. And the reality is, well, we could write down whatever we want, but we're not actually setting policy. I have great fun with people on these panels and go, okay, you want to solve the problem for the next 80, 100 years, 200 years. They're not going to care what you thought was a good idea come 2040, 2050. They're going to decide for themselves. So what we have to do is have a program that makes sense, doesn't involve falling off any cliffs. We're not handing off some unsoluble problem to, you know, our kids, our grandchildren. But we're not in that boat. So this running around that we have to do something now, it's, to my mind, kind of crazy.
Economist Dean Baker, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington. We're talking about the president's new budget, the deficit, and what to do with the big entitlement programs like Social Security. And Dean, before the break, you were saying that there really isn't any pressing need to do anything with Social Security. But the president's debt commission recommended cuts, and some Republicans are again pressing the concept of privatizing Social Security. Do you see any merit in that?
It's hard to see what the point is. I mean, the point, again, of Social Security is it's supposed to be people's core retirement income. And the question is, how could we give people a core retirement income in the most secure, most efficient possible way? And at this point, we have a lot of data, a lot of evidence about privatized systems. They're much, much more expensive to run. The system in Chile that many of the privatizers hold up as a model, the administrative costs of that are 20 to 30 times as much as what our system is. Why would you want to do that? Plus, you have the problem that it's not secure in the sense that we know financial markets are volatile. You know, in terms of people's core retirement income, why would you want to make it less secure and more costly by privatizing it? It makes no sense.
Politically, is there any hope for that idea?
I think it's a real hard sell. You had Representative Ryan from Wisconsin, who's now the Republican head of the Budget Committee in the House, who's a big advocate of that. But he's been reluctant to talk about that, I'm sure, because of the leadership not wanting to be associated with it. So he had his what's called Roadmap for America, and it's very clear. He wants to privatize Social Security. But most of the Republican leadership and most of the members don't seem to want to jump on board, I think, for exactly the reasons I was saying. People have seen, you know, they've had experience with the stock market, with 401ks, and they know that it's risky. And, you know, again, it's great for people to have some money in the stock market, you know, to have other savings in addition to Social Security, but they want their core retirement income, their Social Security income, to be secure.
Well, if you're looking for somewhere to cut then or to save money for Social Security, what about means testing? Some people make the argument that the government should not be giving Social Security checks to wealthy people who don't need the money, while at the same time, they're cutting programs for the poor.
Well, it's interesting. There's two arguments I'd make. One is that just as a practical matter, people paid for that. I mean, you know, Pete Peterson, the
even Bill Gates.
And Bill Gates, well, I'm mentioning Peterson because he goes on a crusade saying he doesn't need his Social Security check, which, of course, is true. I mean, the man has billions of dollars. You know, he certainly doesn't need a Social Security check. Fair enough. But the point is he did pay for it, you know, and he, you know, he probably owns government bonds and he gets the interest on government bonds. He doesn't need that either, but he did pay for it. So I'm sort of inclined to say on one level, okay, people pay in. That was the deal, you know. So, you know, saying you don't need it, well, that, you know, you paid in for it, you should get it. But the other thing is, as a practical matter, you go, okay, let's means test. How many people are there like Pete Peterson? Well, we could take away Pete Peterson's Social Security and all his friends and, you know, all the millionaires, and it barely affects a thing. The only way you get substantial money by means testing is hitting people, most of us, I think, would be very middle class, people who have, say, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year in income, and you have to start cutting their Social Security. So there's not really much of a story of having any big savings by taking away the Social Security for the Petersons or the millionaires. There just aren't that many of them.
And then you're saying it would then touch the firefighters and the teachers as well.
Exactly. There's no way to avoid that because that's where the money is. You know, Social Security is a very progressive program. So Pete Peterson probably doesn't get too much more into Social Security than you or I are likely to get. He might get a little more, but, you know, it's a very progressive program. The maximum payout somewhere around $22,000 a year per person. So you could tax the very rich and get a lot of money that way because they have very high incomes, but they don't have very high Social Security benefits.
Let's turn to taxes. The President's Debt Commission called for spending cuts and higher taxes. Where are you on raising taxes?
Well, we are going to need more revenue. We don't need it today, but we are going to need more revenue. I think part of the story, President Obama's, you know, right to say let's tax the top 2% because these have been the big winners in the economy over the last three decades. So you are hard-pressed to say why they can't afford to pay more, and the arguments this is somehow going to destroy the economy. You go, well, actually, you know, the economy grew fairly well in the Clinton years. We're just going back to the Clinton-era tax rates, and, of course, we grew very well in the period, the three decades immediately following World War II, and we had even higher tax rates. So I think that makes a lot of sense. The other tax I'd like to see, and there's a lot more interest in it elsewhere in the world, certainly in Europe, is a financial speculation tax. And you could raise, by my calculations, over $150 billion a year through this route. This is, in fact, small taxes on trades of stock, options, futures, other derivative instruments. England has it, and they've had it for decades, and they raise the equivalent of about $40 billion a year just by taxing stock trades. So they don't tax options, credit default swaps, all these other things, and they get the equivalent of $40 billion a year. To my mind, that makes good sense.
But would that fly on Wall Street?
Well, Wall Street will fight it like crazy, but, you know, my God, we're talking about cutting people's Social Security, cutting people's Medicare, and we have politicians that can't stand up to Wall Street and just say, hey, why don't you pay a little tax? You know, as an economist and as a citizen, I'd say, well, this makes more policy sense to tax, you know, what are to a large extent useless transactions. And as a citizen, I'm saying, well, these are the people with the money. These are the people that have caused the problems. Why on earth won't we tax them before we start talking about cutting people's Social Security and Medicare?
Overall, I'm hearing you're not as concerned about the deficit as I'm hearing other economists say they are and calling for large cuts and changes to these government entitlement programs. Is that true?
Well, I think we have to be honest about where the deficits come from. We have very large deficits today or 2009, 2010, probably next year also, because the economy fell off a cliff. We lost all this private sector demand that came from the housing bubble, people buying homes, building homes, people spending based on their equity. We lost all that, and there was private sector was not going to replace it, at least not immediately. And if the government weren't running a big deficit today, we'd have much higher unemployment. So the current deficit doesn't bother me at all. The long-term deficit is a healthcare story. So I'm absolutely concerned about healthcare costs, and I'd say we have to fix our healthcare system. But it's very much misrepresenting the issue to say that the problem is entitlements. The problem is our healthcare system's broken, and we have to get that front and center and fix the healthcare system.
Dean Baker is co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, a progressive think tank in Washington, D.C. There's a link to his recent columns at hereandnow.org. Dean, thanks for speaking with us.
Thanks a lot for having me on.